The Areopagus, or we know as Mars Hill. Has anyone heard of this place before? Anyone been to this place before? What's that?
Areopagus.
Okay, thank you, Ray. Areopagus. And the reason it was called Areopagus is, we'll get to that later. I want to speak to you from this passage. I want to give a bit of context in the story here, because Acts is his history. It's actually what happened. It's not other books in the New Testament are letters, but this is actually story. I've made my sermon title this, How to Talk to Strangers. So I'm glad we've sent the kids out now, because that's not what they should be doing. Hear that? Don't talk to strangers. No, it's How to Talk to Strangers. But we want to look at the context of this this story. Paul had come to Athens. Before he was in Athens, he is actually with Timothy and Silas, and they're in Thessalonica. And wanted to give you context of this story is that arrived at Thessalonica, and usually how their ministry worked is Paul would go to the synagogue. And actually, in Thessalonica, there was actually a big Jewish diaspora. There was lots of people that was actually Jewish that had left and were living there. And so he would speak about Jesus in that place. And he was able to share with Jews in Thessalonica, but a number of them became followers of Jesus. But a number of them got really angry, caused issues for him. And there's that whole story about him, and this is where my name comes up in the Bible, actually, where they're hanging out with this Jason, and he got almost arrested, and there was a whole bunch of serious issues going on, to the point that they all had to leave. So Silas, Timothy, and Paul essentially got kicked out, went to the next town along, which was Berea. And in Berea, what actually happened was Jews followed him from Thessalonica to tell Berea, this guy's no good. Caused issues in this town to the point that, again, it looked like he was going to get arrested. Paul was then sent in the night on a boat. Silas and Timothy stayed behind to try and smooth things over and tried to sort it out. But they were worried for Paul so much that they sent him out. He got on a boat and took off down to Athens, feeling super discouraged. Yeah, and he turns up in Athens. And so this is where I want to pick up the story. And some of you, this is actually a really famous passage where Paul turns up in Athens and he notices, what does he notice? Anyone know? Anyone know this story? Anyone want to put up their hand and have a go? I noticed. What's that? Yes, he notices that there was lots and lots and lots and lots of statues to all sorts of gods. Greek culture obviously had many gods, but Athens is one of the centres of this. In fact, Athens at this time had actually passed its heyday. It was actually 400 years before that was really at the height of culture. The centre of the world was probably considered Athens at that time. That is where Socrates and then Archimedes and Plato were philosophies, and the idea of democracy came from Athens and was spread out. At this time, Rome had actually taken over. And so this hill that used to be called Areopagus, is that better, Ray? Close. Areopagus, thank you. Has actually changed its name to be more Roman, because Areopagus actually meant Hill of Ares. And the Romans went, no, we've got a better name for these gods. This is actually Mars Hill. It got changed. It's no longer Ares, it's Mars. God of Mars, that's his hill. What was well known in the town in this place was a place where philosophers actually came to discuss their ideas about philosophy, about religion, about gods, hearing new ideas, and they would discuss them. back a couple of hundred years before, and from 400 even to 200 AD, it was actually in this place as part of the democracy, there was actually a seat of power on this place. The seat of power was a judicial system that sorted out a couple of things. Religious disputes and murder cases. They were the two things that would go to this place. That actually changed when Rome had taken over. They had a whole different system, but it became a place that was known for this seat of power, but now it was a discussion place for philosophers. Paul had come into the town really, in some ways, he wasn't even there, from his perspective, even on mission. He was sent waiting to hear from Silas and Timothy about when he could go back. Waiting to hear, okay, what has God got for me? And he comes into Athens and he sees all these gods and he's thinking and wondering, like, and grieved by this idea. And he ends up in the marketplace just talking to people and just talking to them about Jesus in the way that Paul can't help himself and talking about a different philosophy. And then because as people start to hear, they go, we want to hear this. We want to hear what you're talking about. This is new to our ears. In fact, the philosophers, the Stoics and the Epicureans, two different, probably at that time, two different schools of philosophy, the main schools of philosophy, asked him to go to Mars Hill. What's the next slide there for us, Martin? Paul had a real sense that he wanted to speak to these people about his understanding of how the world worked, his understanding of God. And he was given somewhat the floor to speak to them. And there's a famous speech in Acts 17 of Paul speaking this. You have the next slide for us, Martin? Paul spoke the words that in the end, I think, pick up two things that are really important for us. Spoke these words that I think are really important that we could learn. Talks about the character of Yahweh and how we personally can be corrupted by other gods. God's little. We'll speak about that later. And next slide as well. How to share the gospel with those who think differently. I mean, these are two things we can learn from what Paul did. Paul didn't come to Athens with the idea on mission, but it was just in a sense who he was, the way he lived, what he ended up speaking about, what people wanted to hear. And he spoke to these philosophers who saw the world differently. The gods of that age, ironically, maybe look a little bit similar to the gods, little g, of our age. Yeah? Next slide, Martin. The Stoics and the Epicureans. Next slide, bud. Really simply, Epicureans believed in this outworking of pleasure was the answer to life. Yeah? Whatever would give me pleasure. Another word from the Greek, hedonism. This idea, whatever I could do to find the best out of life, to do what's good for me, because how they saw the world was actually that it was in chaos. Whether there was gods or not, not sure how it actually even started, but there was a nature that we could see the world was in chaos. So how we can find the best in life is just to enjoy it. This was the Epicureans' philosophy. Next slide, Martin. Yeah, to find that life is chaos, so I need to find my happiness. Yeah, there's a lot more to it. They spoke into that idea. They have philosophy around that, and they lived a certain, you can imagine that lives out in a certain way. Does anyone feel like that sounds familiar? Yeah? Let's look at, people don't say, I'm of the school of Epicureans anymore, do they? We just live Next slide for us, Martin. The Stoics. Stoics were a different breed, believed in ideas of the rule of law, and were moralists. There was a certain way to live. But it's interesting why they thought that, because... You go next slide, Martin. Life is pain. Life is pain. Not life has pain. Life is pain. So control yourself. I can control my own emotions and the way that I react to things. So this is where we get the phrase being stoic from. Is not to react because life is pain. But there was essentially that they believed that there was these morals that hold truth. That yes, life is pain, but we can live a certain way. We can have some morals about this. And we can control my life. If we control it, we can have peace. Yeah? Might not sound what we think like it sounds. But I reckon there's still... I think people either go one way or the other. They either go, let me find my happiness, or surely I can control the outside here for it to be peaceful. Yeah? Go to the next slide for us, Martin. So these are examples in our own culture. I wanted to look at this, the Epicureans. That I'm free to pursue my own happiness. Yeah? This is absolutely, I think, a tenet for a lot of people. That we should be free to pursue our own happiness. Where that leads me? You know, as long as it doesn't affect anybody else. Oh, I've written something a little bit smaller on there. No. Anyone read that for me? Who's got good eyes? Unfortunately, all our actions affect others, doesn't it? This is the big lie so often of the God of this age, isn't it? The God of this age will tell you, you are free to follow your heart's content and your own happiness. Because that seems like worthwhile. That seems like a worthwhile pursuit. But we don't realize that that will not find us life. We think that that will find us life. But it impinges on the freedoms of everybody else when we do that. It's a truth that we find hard. And in fact, the people that we hold up sometimes, the gods of this age, the people that we hold up and would think that they have found everything that we've said that can find happiness, quite often are the people that know this best. I'm reminded of a Jim Carrey quote around this idea that he said, when I found everything that I realized it was all meaningless. That he was given everything that the world had to offer. So many celebrities get to this space and realize, I've got everything that the world has to offer. What's next? Another favorite of mine, comedian by the name of Russell Brand, remembered one year sitting with his mum watching the Oscars. And he's looking at the people and thinking, Mum, I want to be one of those people. He actually said it out loud to her. And at that stage, he wasn't even doing anything. He was actually just a drug addict. And within 2 years, he was one of those people. And he thought he'd got absolutely everything. And he remembers sitting in that room and thinking, this is the boringest thing I've ever been at. It's 5 hours of sitting here, clapping people, talking about themselves. This is the worst. Sat in that room and realized that everything, all this fleeting pleasure, never satisfies. Next example, this in our culture. This idea of trying to control what we can control. If life is pain, let's control it, let's get rid of the pain. Maybe we can control it. And I think this is where this PC culture exists, that there's elements that we may believe in the ideal of going, hey, maybe we can make a safe place in this world. But then how it outworks becomes crazy. How it outworks hurts all our hearts, doesn't it? We know and see that. That the idea is not bad, but the outworking of this idea. And I think this comes from this stoicism, this moralistic idea that we can control the world because life is pain. This is what we do with life is pain. And I've said this, whoever thinks differently, this is the problem with this, is that when we start to think that if people think differently than us, that there's something wrong with them, and we need to, I know Mike used to speak on this all the time, this line of source and essence, if only we could find a way to put the bad people on this side of the room and the good people on this side of the room, let's work it out now. Guys, you ready? Oh, Zach, which side are you going to go, mate? Quick. Oh, then we can just get rid of them, and then the world will be safe. But that's Solzhenitsyn's line, isn't it? But we all know where that line falls. It's not between different people. It's through the heart of every person, isn't it? Through the heart of every one of us. There's a part of us, yeah, that needs help, that needs changing. Because if we see the world any other way, we start to see the world, I've written in the little line there that you can read, that we can start to see other people are a monster and that they're less than human. And that actually ends up being the worst of humanity, doesn't it? The worst of humanity. When we've seen history, especially in the 20th century, when we start doing this and we go, life is pain, let's try and separate, what do we do? What have people done? The biggest atrocities. Don't need to say those names. But they all had actually good ideals. Good ideas. Pol Pot. Stalin. Mao. Hitler. They all, weird thing to say, they all had ideals that were good. But it worked out terribly. That's an understatement, isn't it? Next. And this is the line within what Paul said in that space. That I want us to focus on. And in fact, I was going to play a song at the start. And I actually think I'm going to play it now, Martin. You reckon we could do that? I'm going to play a song for you.
Shine down your light on us tonight. Show us the love of God. Sister, son, you bring out the day. You shine in the light of God on your face today.
Thanks. Love those words that comes from Paul's speech at Mars Hill. I love that repeated line about that God is good. You are good. You are beautiful. You are everything. These are Paul's words. He is not far from us, each one of us, for in him we live and move and have our being. And also, for some of our own poets have said, we are also his offspring. This is the place that Paul wanted to speak to, and this is the point that I wanted to make, is that the world and the gods of this age have not changed. They're still trying to address the same problem of pain in this world. One would say, just worry about pleasure. Just worry about your own happiness. Just go do those things. We know that ends up with emptiness. The other would say, let's deal with the problem of evil. And that's a problem too, because people become monsters when they do that. They become evil themselves. And I think this is part of the answer in this space. If God would say that he is good, if you're looking for good, and as he spoke to the people at Mars Hill that had no idea of this God that we follow, the Yahweh that is in everything, is everything. He is everything good, and that we have our being in him, and that we are his offspring. We're his sons and daughters. All of creation, the maker of all things, all of his that is good is his. All of this you see, the idea of that brother moon, I know evocative words for some, brother moon, sister sun, mother earth. I know the idea there is that we are all connected in creation, and he is not far from us. He is not far from us. That God would want to know he is right there. And in fact, if you have said yes to him, he is in you and would want you to know that his being is in you. You can have, you can live and move, not just come to a church service and worship him, but in every moment of your life that you would know that he is there. He is good, he is beautiful, and he will show you life and life to the full if you'd let him. If you just let him in. I think that's exciting. That's the answer to the pain in our own lives. So we said that line. It's the answer to the pain in our own lives. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk to, the other point, that's where the source of life is. Go past that slide for us, Martin. Let's go to the next one. Just talking about the source of life. Wanted to go to the next one. Thanks, mate. How to share this gospel to those who think differently. As I said, we've come to a place in our culture now that this is starting to become more and more difficult. Isn't it? When we talked about this already with this PC culture and trying to find safer places, that when we're getting taught that when we come up against things that people who think differently, we're told to get rid of them from our lives. That only causes that pain thing. That only causes discomfort, a little bit of uneasiness. I see it in our young people who've lived in just this culture, that they are averse to uncomfortableness. Not just pain, uncomfortableness. They'll find the path of least resistance. It scares me. Scares me even in my own life, to be honest. I do the same thing. We have so many conveniences in life, don't we? We're constantly thinking about how can we make this a little bit easier? Yeah. I'm attracted to my brother-in-law's house. He's got, what's it called? It's Apple app. He's able to like control his lights, locks on his doors, his TV, his air conditioner, from anywhere, from his phone. It's like, wow, that's amazing. But I think it's the perfect symbol. Don't get me wrong, some of these things are great. Some of these things, but they put us in this space, don't they, of looking for the path of least resistance. and we're scared of saying things that are different to other people. And I think Paul's got an answer for us in the way that he shares. Thousands of years ago, but the gods of this age aren't any different. Really interesting when we think about it. I think when we think about what Paul would have done, we think he might have got something out and threw it at them and the fire and brimstone, don't we? We get a picture of Paul. This is the words that he used. Go on, Martin. Check those up for us. Men of Athens, I perceive in all things you are very religious. So his heart hurt seeing all the gods and the gods of this age and all in Athens. And what does he say to them? Men of Athens, I perceive in all things you're very religious. He praises them. It's not necessarily what we thought Paul would have said. What's the next slide for us, Martin? Then went on further say, I even found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing him, I will now proclaim to you. And that's when he goes on to say, he's the maker of all, in him move and find our being and that we are his offspring. He picks up the place that he sees God. He sees Yahweh. He noticed this statue to the unknown God. He noticed that they were not far from him. In fact, he even says something that we might find uncomfortable, is he said that you worship him, but you don't know his character. Let me tell you about this God. Without even realizing they were worshiping him. That sounds uncomfortable to us because we think it's like, oh, people who don't know God, they must be against him. Rather than realizing that we are all in our hearts are sometimes against God. But you know what? Sometimes we worship him even if we don't know him well. For some of us we do, and that's why. And he wanted to tell them, let me tell you about this God. And he shares with them a God, a creator of all. And right at the end, he doesn't even mention Jesus' name. But he suggests to them there's someone who wants to set the world right and has actually come back. And if you want to know about him, talk to me. That's what he essentially says at the end of that, end of his speech. But he wanted them to understand that God is not far away. In fact, you might have already been worshiping him and did not know. I think this is the answer in some ways for us. As we think about the way we interact with people who think differently, it's our job to be living that life, showing that life of being in him, moving in him, and showing his being, but actually looking for signs of people interacting with God and they don't even really know. Let me tell you about the God that is good. Yes. You've found goodness in this place. Let me tell you why. Sounds difficult, maybe? Let me give you an example. I was talking a couple of years ago, talking to a friend, at a party, at a get-together, talking to a friend who's didn't grow up in any sort of church, has no sort of church background, but was talking to me about just the stresses of life, just fast-paced life and his kids having some issues there and realising he needed to find peace and saying one of the only places that he can find peace is when he goes for a run and goes up to Anstey's Hill and just sits up there and looks around. Said to him, what do you reckon that is? Why do you find peace in that? He said, oh, you know, just being in the outdoors, just being. I said, isn't creation awesome? I think it's when those times when we let all those things go, that we get a sense of actually there is a God that wants us to have peace, hey? And he could agree with that. Maybe he just didn't want to argue the point. But I'm able to lay a seed and talk about this idea that there is a God that wants to know him, wants to give him peace. And his experience at that place, the actual experience that he had, whether he recognized it or not yet, was God letting him know, wasn't it? That there's peace to be found. In him we move and have our being. We are his offspring. He is the maker of all things. A few years ago now, it's a long time ago now, I realise, church I used to go to before this one, a church down south, Seaview Community Church. Pretty normal-ish church, but their night service was not particularly normal for the time. And I was asked to look after these group of people that started the 6 months before. They started because a group of guys who were in bands that would play in town, in punk hardcore scene that used to play in town in, oh wow, I'm going to say really long ago, in the mid-90s, late-90s. There's a bunch of guys there that were Christians that were wanting to, the language and the songs and the way that they wanted to share Jesus was that's the way they wanted to share Jesus. And then they started to, being in that scene and recognising, essentially, it was funny because in this place and in this movement of people, they felt like authority has got this all wrong. Authority and power corrupts. We hate all of that. That punk heart was to actually throw out that idea. Authority corrupts, power corrupts. I don't want anything to do with that. In fact, I'm interested in bringing all of that down. That was the heart of that idea of punk. And these guys who spoke into that music would say, all of that makes sense to us because there's only one authority in my life. All of that other makes no sense because the only authority in my life is Jesus. And that's how they spoke into that. And funny enough, they saw people who had nothing to do with church, want to know more, want to follow this Jesus they're talking about. And they had a group of people and they went, how do we take these? And I know this might find hard to believe, but in the mid, late 90s, there wasn't heaps of people with tattoos going to church. Now it's every man and his dog. But a lot of these guys have massive, you only see it very often, massive flesh holes, earrings and tatted up everywhere. And in fact, as people in that culture, I know guys who were the same Jesus followers like this. And they felt really uncomfortable because they couldn't bring them. They felt like they couldn't bring them to the place, the fellowship of believers, because of the way they looked. How sad. But having said that, they started the church and they asked me to try, and they were going for about 6 months, and the chaos of artistic punk people meant that they asked the most organized person they knew to help them with some organization. And I loved it. It was the best. But everything was different. You'd get up to speak and straight away you were heckled. Boo! They'd laugh at you. Well, maybe it wasn't that different. If you'd bring up something that they didn't agree with, they didn't just kindly not say anything and then write an email later. Straight at you. What? Oh, that's... Oh, maybe I can't say. And I'd have to have a discussion on the spot. But it was alive because they were wanting to follow Jesus. And sometimes they would come and people would be alive and it was amazing and God's Spirit was there because of their passion. But sometimes it was pure chaos and nothing happened. But that was a bunch of people trying to follow Jesus in their culture. People were thought very differently, that you would have thought that was anti-God. But we're just that close. So near. When I say they're anti-authority, you would have thought they are the farthest thing from God. But when you realize that, it's so close. Because God is everywhere. God is near. God is right there. Do you want to go to Martin? We're going to finish with some questions. We'll get the band up. I just want you to think about these questions and sit there. Obviously, we're not able to sing. But I reckon these are questions for you around those two things, I think, that Paul picked up. Where do you interact with people who think differently than you? I actually think this is what God asks us to be when he wants us to be about his kingdom. He doesn't want us to shut ourselves off from the world. But actually, this is a challenge for me as a pastor, as a chaplain of a Christian school. Where is it that I interact with people who think differently than me? And where do I see others looking for Jesus and they don't even realize? Where is it that I might be able to engage in those conversations? I think these are two questions to really ask yourself on the way that we share the gospel. And two other questions I think you'd want you to ask yourself in this space, because it's really important where you interact. But these are two other questions around this. Where do you have true fellowship? Because to do that, you need to be interacting with God, true fellowship, and with one another, encourage one another, so that you can be in those spaces. And how do you show that love of Jesus? Paul didn't even speak his name, but he spoke the gospel that day. And we continue to speak about that passage in Acts, and we're still trying to wrestle with that and figure that all out, and I still will continue to do that. But he showed the love of Jesus that day in his words and in his actions. So the one thing I want to do is these guys play a song, and we're going to use Menti again. So if you've got the ability to join this discussion and answer that question, how is God calling you to show the love of Jesus? You get on that space and share that. Thanks, Dennis.